Thank you very much, Your Honor, and may it please the court. I'm Nicholas Carlin of Phillips Early Wine Given and Carlin in San Francisco for the plaintiff and appellant Anthony Gantner. I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal, please.
Sure.
Mr. Gantner brought this class action lawsuit against PG&E in the wake of the massive power outages in 2019. He contends that the reason PG&E cut the power in what they call public safety power shutoffs, or PSPSs, was because the maintenance of its power lines was so negligent that it was forced to cut the power to avoid sparking more wildfires. We've alleged in our complaint, and as Judge Alsup in his supervision of PG&E's criminal probation has repeatedly emphasized, these PSPSs were necessitated by this negligent maintenance, including the failure to properly trim trees close to power lines and the failure to replace old decrepit equipment. We do not take issue here with the decision to implement these outages or the manner in which PG&E did them. And we do not say that all PSPSs are actionable, only those that were made necessary by PG&E's negligence. Now, this case in no way interferes with the CPUC's regulation of PG&E. To the contrary, it is in aid of, rather than in derogation, of those regulations by encouraging PG&E to comply with its obligations as set forth in the Public Utilities Code Section 451 to maintain a safe power grid. Now, PG&E argues essentially two arguments in support of its preemption argument. First, it's sort of this generalized notion that just because they regulate PSPSs, that anything touching upon them must be preempted. And that's completely wrong and contrary to all the case law. This is not a type of preemption like field preemption, for example, if you're looking at state versus federal law. It's a type of preemption where you actually have to show that the conduct alleged, or that a judgment in the case, would actually interfere in some way with PG&E's regulation of the utility. And PG&E simply has not shown that here. The
CPUC filed an amicus brief saying that if we allowed courts to impose liability on PG&E the way you'd like, that it would hinder its ability to regulate power shutoffs. So what do you think we should do in terms of deference to that amicus brief? How can we reconcile that amicus brief with your argument?
Well, glad you asked that question, Judge Friedland. There is no deference. They are entitled to no deference here. There's no basis for any special deference given to an amicus brief from PUC. And in fact, numerous courts have, in very similar situations, have ignored the PUC amicus briefs, in particular the Wilson case and the Mata case. In both of those cases, PUC, just like here, submitted an amicus brief saying, this is going to interfere or hinder our regulation, but with no specifics. And same here. There are no specifics given. There's no beef. Where's the beef? And incidentally, the former executive director of the PUC, Alice Stebbins, who was the director during the period of these blackouts, has submitted an amicus brief herself, completely to the contrary of the PUC, where she contends that, and agrees with us, that this case would in no way interfere with PUC's regulation of PG&E. In fact, it would aid and complement it. Because what we're saying here, Your Honor, is that the regulations that, or the laws that PG&E has violated here, are essentially contained in Public Utilities Code 451, which says you have to maintain a safe grid. That's what we're saying they did wrong. They were negligent because they didn't maintain a safe grid.
Counsel, let me put this question or this issue to you
it seems to me that frequently a regulatory body with this type of jurisdiction has to make decisions, even if implicitly, about what they're going to try to put the hammer down on. This is not like, water, where you want 2.3 units of something instead of 2.4. You've got all kinds of things that the utility probably is doing wrong, and the PUC has to decide how to rectify that, how to bring them into line, how to put the hammer down. And so it seems to me, and give me your view on it, that when you say it's in aid of what they're doing, it's in aid of one view of it, and their view may not have been the same. So aren't we sort of transferring regulation from the PUC to random plaintiffs?
No, what I mean by saying, Judge Boggs, is that this lawsuit actually aids in enforcing PG&E's duty to maintain a safe power grid. It's as simple as that. They were woefully, criminally negligent in failing to maintain that safe power grid. And by holding them responsible for that misconduct, we can only be aiding in their regulation, because that's what they're required to do. Now, keep in mind that PG&E bears the burden of proof here. This is an affirmative defense of preemption. And to just sort of wave their hands and say, well, PG&E or even PUC to say, well, this is somehow hindering us, without saying why, they're not meeting their burden of proof. They have to actually show some specifics as to how it would actually interfere. And if we look at the cases that have come down in this area, there's really only three cases where the courts have held that there was preemption. All the other cases found there wasn't, because just like in this case, in the Mata case, in the Hartwell case, that was a split decision, in the Wilson case, and all those other cases where there's no preemption, it's the same situation as here, where there's just sort of a generalized argument that because it touches upon an area we regulate, or an area PUC regulates, that it's preempted. The only cases where it was actually preempted were in the Covalt case, where the complaint was that these EMFs, these electromagnetic fields from the high voltage wires, were causing damage to the plaintiffs. And but these levels had been approved by the PUC. So obviously that specifically would be contrary to a PUC directive. In the Cooney case, which was a district case by an in pro per plaintiff, who claimed that radio waves from a smart meter caused her to go live in some radio-free zone in West Virginia. Well, you know, the court held, the smart meters were approved by PUC. Those levels were approved by PUC. If we were to hold it, they're dangerous, then we're violating some specific finding of the PUC. And same in the Sorale case, which talked about the minimum distance for cutting walnut trees. The court found that the specific regulation allowing the utility to cut more than that 10-foot minimum for safety purposes would have been violated if they held that it was improper. So in all those cases, you have very specific regulations of the PUC that were that would have been contradicted by the court ruling in favor of the plaintiff. Here, we don't have that at all. There's not even a contention of that. The only thing that they've raised, the only specific that they've raised, is this notion of, because of the quote unquote massive liability, that would be a disincentive for PG&E to engage in these public safety power shutoffs. And frankly, that is a highly cynical argument for them to make, to suggest essentially what they are suggesting is that if they have to pay damages for the harm they caused to their customers in implementing a PSPS, then they won't do it. They'd rather risk causing wildfires than have to pay for some spoiled groceries for their customers.
Counsel, much of the argument today has been almost a policy argument. What kind of makes sense in weighing the various positive and negatives, and the CPUC has weighed in on this. What do you think about the idea of us seeking help from the California Supreme Court? Because this seems to be a big question for the state. Why not get their help on this one?
Well, Judge Owens, I happened to have attended your seminar on this subject the other day, and we have suggested that in our papers. I don't think you have to go there. I think it's so clear here that they have not met their burden of proof on preemption that there's really no need to go back to the California Supreme Court. But obviously, if your honors find that it's not something that you want to tackle here and you'd rather submit it to the California Supreme Court, obviously that's something that, you know, we've suggested as a possibility.
And am I right that this is only in federal court because of the bankruptcy proceedings? There's no, you know, this is really all a matter of state law. Am I right about that?
Yes, that's true, Judge Boggs. That's the only reason we're here in the Ninth Circuit, is because we had to file this as an adversary proceeding in the bankruptcy court. But if I could address this argument of the liability that would somehow would justify this preemption, the argument that the liability to the customers is something that PG&E can take into account. The fact is that's wrong for four reasons. First, the CPUC's regulations say that the only factors the utility is supposed to take into account in deciding whether or not to conduct a shutdown is you weigh the risk of a wildfire against the potential cost or harm to the customers. They're not allowed to take into account the cost to themselves. There's not one suggestion anywhere in any of the PUC records or documents anywhere that is the consideration that they can take. And they shouldn't, because the only issue is safety here. The only issue is protecting the public from wildfires if it gets to that point. It should not be based on what PG&E's potential bottom line might be. And in even making that argument, they're violating Section 1759, because what they're doing is trying to add, to change essentially the PUC standards. And that would be a violation of Section 1759. Also, that argument does not relate to CPUC regulation at all. It doesn't say anything about CPUC's regulation. It only talks about PG&E's internal decision making. It's totally illogical anyway, because why would they really risk causing wildfires where they've had to pay billions, in fact, $13 billion in the last round, in order to avoid having to pay customers for loss of the cost of their spoiled groceries or whatever from a power outage.
Counsel, did you want to reserve some time for rebuttal?
Yes, I had reserved 4 minutes.
Because the clock was 15. You've kind of burned through that. So why don't we do this? I'll give you 2 minutes for rebuttal. And why don't we hear from opposing counsel now?
Thank you, Ron.
May it please the court, Omid Nasab for PG&E. Your honors, the issue raised by this appeal is whether a California utility can be subjected to civil liability for engaging in a public safety measure that has been expressly authorized by its regulator, the CPUC. The public
safety. It's not really liability for the public, the PSPS, right? It's liability for not maintaining the grid.
No, Your Honor, the damages that the plaintiff seeks is directly for the authorized conduct, in the sense that the damages that he seeks are, you know, spoiled food in the refrigerator, inability to harvest wine grapes, the cost of running a generator. All of that liability is stemming out exactly from the shutoffs. And that is the conduct that the CPUC has authorized. So yes, the plaintiff tries to say that the negligence is from the condition of the grid, but the conduct that the damages are all from the shutoffs themselves. And
so say that PG&E's duties were divided in between two companies. So you had one company that was maintaining the grid and another company that was like running the grid. So the PSPSs are, the company running the grid has to shut them down, but a different company has maintained the grid. Is there any reason under your theory why you couldn't sue the company that had maintained the grid and get damages for the PC, the damage caused by shutting it off, but for the company that didn't maintain the grid?
And that's in that hypothetical, Your Honor, the entity managing the grid would be also regulated by the CPUC?
Well, presumably, because they're a power company, but they would have nothing to do with the decision to do PSPSs, because that would be the other company.
Your Honor, honestly, I would have to think about that question. What I know is that here it is the same company, and these public safety shutoffs are conducted by all utilities in the state, not just PG&E. In fact, state law mandates that all utilities in the state have protocols for de-energizing their grids. That's not just PG&E. That's every utility in the state. And that regulatory program is something that the CPUC has been engaged in a process for over a decade to get exactly at what Mr. Carlin referenced, which is to strike the right balance between keeping the power on and shutting it off for safety. What the plaintiff is proposing to do here is to put on one side of that scale massive potential civil liability, including what he seeks in this case is $2.5 billion of damages just for the shutoffs in 2019. They seek punitive damages to punish PG&E as a result of the shutoffs, and they also seek to impose the burden and expense of dealing with hundreds of thousands of disparate claims. Right, the theory of liability alleged here is quite broad. Mr. Carlin said it does not.
So they may or may not succeed in that. But say that you win. What prevents PG&E from just continuing to not maintain the grid and having the cost be borne by all these customers who lose their food a week every month for every summer of the rest of time?
Well, Your Honor, the CPUC is very actively engaged in ensuring that shutoffs are done only when necessary, and to the extent that a utility over time is overusing the shutoffs.
Well, they may not be overusing the shutoffs, because if they don't maintain the grid, maybe the shutoffs are totally necessary all the time.
Well, Your Honor, part of what the CPUC manages is the wildfire mitigation process that the utilities, all utilities across the state, have to engage in every year. As part of that process, that includes the holistic view of the wildfire mitigation programs, including steps that the utilities need to take to over time narrow and reduce the number of PSPS events. So I don't think there would be a situation. I mean, there's obviously liability, right? If something happens where there's a problem with the grid and the damage is caused by the negligence itself, a pole is not maintained and it falls and hits somebody, or God forbid, starts a fire, there, of course, is potential liability and a huge incentive for PG&E to address those problems. Part of the reason PG&E spends $4 billion a year on wildfire mitigation efforts across the board.
But they could either fix the pole or they could shut off the power around the pole. And so if they don't have to pay anything for shutting off the power around the pole, why don't they just keep shutting off the power around the pole and never fix the pole?
Well, Your Honor, I think the CPUC, if that kind of conduct were to occur, has broad authority to make sure that it does not, right? There is constant review of why shutoffs are being done and whether or not they are appropriate. And if that kind of situation is ongoing, then I believe that the CPUC would address that. Number one, I also think it's not authorized. I don't think the CPUC authorizes a utility to ignore the condition of its grid and de-energize repeatedly to avoid spending the money to fix a grid, right? I think you would have a situation there where if that hypothetical were true, that would not be in compliance with the CPUC's authorization.
Well, why not? I mean, in any given case, if there might be a wildfire, it's better to shut off the power than have the wildfire, right? So if that's the only consideration, what would prevent it from just saying, okay, this is another time we have to shut off?
Under, I believe, the CPUC guidelines, the utilities have a duty to mitigate, to reduce the use of PSPS over time, not just for maintenance, right, but to add, for example, sectionalizers to the grid to make them more narrow, to underground lines, to harden lines in particular places where they would have an impact on reducing the amount of PSPS. I think if you know that a wildfire is going to happen, I think the right answer is to shut off the power. That said, it's never, I don't think, that black and white that you know that. It's more about judging the potential risks. But the critical fact that we have here, right, is that the plaintiff has conceded that the authorizations were consistent with the CPUC's authority, right? That the CPUC had authorized these, that the shutoffs were consistent with the guidelines. Now, Mr. Carlin said earlier that what we were seeking to do is say anything touching a PSPS is preempted. That's absolutely not the case. If there was a allegation, for example, that the CPUC's guidelines around PSPS were violated, somebody didn't get the appropriate notice, the power was not shut off when it was necessary and when it was a last resort as required by CPUC guidelines, then we would have a very different case. But what the plaintiff in this case has said from the beginning is that they are not challenging the compliance with the CPUC guidelines. As Mr. Carlin told way back to the bankruptcy court, told Judge Montali, PG&E had the authority to do the shutdowns. We are not contesting that.
I just don't understand, unless you can point to what in the PSPS regulations says if it's caused by negligence of the grid, it's violating the regulations or something. Once there is negligence in maintaining the grid and a fire might start, there's reason to do the PSPS again. And we've already talked about this. So the fact that it was appropriate to turn off the power to mitigate the risk doesn't tell us that there wasn't a problem earlier about maintaining the grid and causing that problem.
Well, Your Honor, number one, I think the CPUC guidelines are clear that PSPSs are meant to be a measure of last resort. I think if you are engaging in shutoffs year after year because you're not doing something to maintain your grid, that would not be in compliance with the CPUC's guidelines. All right, if you're just sort of year after year, because I don't believe
we have had shutoffs year after year at this point. We're a few years in and there are shutoffs in some areas every summer.
That's true, Your Honor. They have reduced every year in terms of the number of people affected, and they have reduced quite significantly. So the scope of the shutoffs has gone down every single year from 2019 until the present, and the CPUC is very focused on additional steps and investments that can be made over time to do that. So I think that is a matter of fact. Now, again, this is not, I come back to it because this is not a case where the plaintiff is alleging that those guidelines were violated. So what he is seeking to do is impose liability for conduct that the CPUC has authorized. I think that Covalt and Hartwell teach that's not permissible. And I also believe that it's also the case that under California law, it's not enough to make out a claim under 2106, the law that Mr. Carlin cited, because Section 1759, as the Covalt case clearly held, has primacy and limits the cause of action in 2106. And I just, you know, it remains the case that the CPUC, and again, at the end of the day, this was done through a process of decades, a decade plus of work with wide input from all stakeholders in California. And this is an active program. And in the wisdom of that regulator, these shutoffs have been authorized. And the question, I think, as a legal matter under California law, is did we act within that authorization, or did we violate it? As the Hartwell case said, if you're within the authorization, that's not challengeable. If you allege that the authorizations were violated, that the shutoff was not of the last resort, that it wasn't necessary, then those lawsuits may proceed. That was the holding of the Hartwell case. In this case, Mr. Carlin doesn't dispute that the guidelines were met. And I think it is this notion that seeking $2.5 billion, seeking punitive damages and hundreds of thousands of disparate claims, which have their own burden, that does not interfere with the CPUC's attempted balancing. That does not make sense to me. And I think that's precisely the reason the CPUC has weighed in this case. And that brief is notable because, contrary to the arguments here, Mr. Carlin's arguments earlier, the Carey case, the Ninth Circuit, this court, said that it finds the CPUC's statements regarding its jurisdictional interests to be, quote, very persuasive, precisely on this issue of whether a civil action would interfere with the CPUC's ongoing authority. It did that for a couple reasons. Number one, because the California Supreme Court has looked to the CPUC, and also because I think, as a matter of common sense, who would know the jurisdiction of the CPUC better than that agency itself? And the CPUC honed in precisely on the same points recognized by the district court and the bankruptcy court.
It is true, though, that courts have also sometimes ignored briefs from the CPUC or not given them deference, right? I mean, it seems like the CPUC has filed briefs in cases saying this is a problem for us and courts have not agreed. So it's not just positive.
I agree that in the Court of Appeals case, the Wilson case, which did not deal with the third prong of the Covalt test, which is where this court said that the CPUC's views are very persuasive, it was instead on the second question, which is, did the CPUC regulate the conduct at all? In that case, the Wilson court disagreed with the CPUC that its regulations were specific enough to the issue of stray voltage. So that is correct. And of course, this court, you know, the CPUC cannot dictate to this court. But I do think it is the case that both the California Supreme Court and this court have recognized that the CPUC should, that its views are very persuasive, to use the Carey court's words, on this issue.
And what is your view currently on whether we should certify to the California Supreme Court?
Your Honor, in my view, we sort of have the opposite view of Mr. Carlin. We think the bankruptcy court, the district court, the CPUC, they all aligned on the same principle that Covalt and Hartwell, they say that you can't impose civil liability on authorized conduct. That's exactly what this case does, and therefore it's a straight application. Obviously, if this court does not feel that it is a clear question, that is a option available to this court, but it was not one that we agree with the way the bankruptcy court, the district court, and the CPUC analyze this issue.
All right, any other questions? Seeing no hands, thank you very much, counsel, for your argument.
Thank you.
We'll hear rebuttal from Mr. Carlin. Oops, you gotta unmute yourself, Mr. Carlin. Don't believe me, I did it in the last case. Don't worry about it.
Thank you, Your Honor. So, as Mr. Nassab said, in the Carey case, the court found the PUC's brief persuasive. So it has to be persuasive. They're entitled to no special deference. If they're persuasive on their own merits, then to listen to. And in the Carey case, PUC just said, well, we take no position on whether these taxi drivers are independent contractors or employees. So it's no wonder that they went along with that. PG&E keeps talking about, it's really a red herring. They keep saying we authorize the PSPSs. Well, first of all, PUC doesn't authorize them. They have guidelines. PG&E is the entity that decides to call one. But what was not authorized is to maintain their grid in a negligent manner. That's really the crux of the issue, as Judge Friedland has pointed out. It's that is what was not authorized. PG&E was not authorized to not cut its trees. It was not authorized to leave 100-year-old equipment on the line. That's what they were not authorized to do. And that's really, as in Hartwell, when you have conduct that is authorized by the CPUC, there isn't going to be liability. So in that case, they said the standards for the water supply, the plants couldn't attack the actual standards. But if the utility had water that fell below that standard, they could be liable. So in that case, the court held that you could have a cause of action for the bad water. Now, just one last thing. When you talk about authorization, let's take an example of a person who's driving a car and has not maintained his brakes properly. Okay, and he's licensed. He's licensed by the state to drive that car. And he drives his car, the brakes fail, he's heading towards a crosswalk full of pedestrians. And at that point, he has to make a choice. Do I plow into the pedestrians, or do I steer over to the right side and damage some cars on the side of the road? That's really the equivalent of what we have here, Your Honors. The PG&E failed to maintain its brakes. It was authorized to drive the car, but it had to make the choice whether to plow into the people or damage the cars. In either case, it should be liable for the damage it causes. It should be liable for causing the wildfires, and they have been liable for causing the wildfires. And if they decide they don't want to cause the wildfires and instead harm their customers, they should pay for that too. And with that, I will rest.
Thank you very much. Unless there's anything else, I want to thank both counsel for their argument in another interesting case. Thank you very much for that.